Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah David, Minister of Trust Hour, Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation on the night of Trust Hour in the Elgin, Texas. Today is March the 7th, 26. What is 8 hour 20, 20, 30. We're going to start our first service today with part two of the Shepherd's Rod, Track 1 of E.T. Hollow. We're on page 27. And it's the title of our sermon is Company of the Esau and our Jacob. Which? That's the question mark. Who are we today? And so we go into this, and Isaac entreated the Yahweh for his wife, because she was barren. And the Yahweh was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived, and the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Yahweh. And the Yahweh said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of the people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one shall be stronger than the other people. And the elder shall serve the younger. And when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red, all over like a hairy garment. And he called his name Esau. And after that came his brother out, and his hand took a hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob. Genesis 25, 21-26. And the preternatural birth, and the lives of the Esau and Jacob, there is unmistakably of the divine design and typology, for the strange anomaly of the family's experience, obviously dramatized in the miniature and experience through which Yahweh's church would one day pass. Whether her Rebekah herself was made well aware of this fact when the Yahweh said unto her, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of the people shall be separated from thy bowels, and the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. Verse 23. What is the typology in this throbbing life drama? Basically, there stands forth in the Paul's interpretation of the equally intense drama of the Hagar and Ishmael, Sarah and Isaac, where the inspiration unveils the fact that the former pair represents the Old Testament church and its members, the Jews, and that the latter pair represents the New Testament church and its members, the typical apostolic, which they call today Christians, which is not the correct wording for antithetical apostolic believers. The antithetical apostolic believers are feast keepers, they're Israelites. These antithetical Christians, as they call today, they're antithetical Gentiles. And co-mixed with apostatized Israel. Galatians 4:22-31. Similarly, though, in another phase, Rebekah also represents the house of Israel, while the Esau and Jacob represents her offspring, the laity, that is, the members that sits out there in the pews of the congregation, where the two struggle within their mother before they were born or delivered. For the important lesson is that while the church is travailing with her children just before they are delivered, receive the second birth, John 3:3, and are led into the kingdom. They are the struggle within. So Rebekah's turn of the two sons makes known that the church is turned within her two classes of the people, Esau and the Jacobs. There are two opposing influences, affirms the inspiration, continually exerted on the members of the house of Israel. One, the influence is with the working for the purification. Let's do it again. For the one influence is for the working for of the purification. Let's do it again. For the one influence is with the working for the purification of the house of Israel, the 12 tribes. And today that would be the 144,000 representing the 12 tribes today. And the other for the corruption of the people of the Yahweh. And so that's Ellen G. White's quote, TM, page 46. For the manner that the Esau and the Jacob were born, Jacob's following of the Esau should let's do it again. For the manner in the which Esau and Jacob were born, with the Jacob's following Esau a hold of his heel, has very obvious significance. For the Esau's leading makes him as a type of the leaders with the possessing of his character, and Jacob's following makes him as a type of the followers with by the possessing of his character. For this analogy, and errantly, is with the signification also that the one represents of a class that precedes the other in this house and the temple's fellowship. For the broadly speaking, therefore, they together represent the candidates for a successor ministry and laity, respectively. There is also the typical significance in the further fact that Esau was born hairy and Jacob smooth. This outstanding external unlikeness obviously imports some kind of outstanding visible identification of the two classes typified. For the Yahweh ordained a man for the leading and the woman for the following, as much as he created the man hairy and the woman smooth. These divine marks of the distinction reveal that the Esau and the class that he represents is with the possessing of the natural equipment for the leadership, while the Jacob and the class that he represents do not. Besides, being as the firstborn is with the Esau by the birthright, to be given the family's priesthood. Through him were to come the progenitors of the 12 tribes of the Israel, which would be the 144,000 today, and the first fruits harvest out of the Adventist Church, the prophets, the princes, and the kings of the Israel, even the King of the Kings himself, the Savior of the world. But the desires, ambitions, and aims of the Esau and Jacob ran counter unto their inherited positions, for the Esau had no special interest in the part of the work that his birthright permitted, whereas Jacob coveted the birthright. For the being blocked through, let's do it again. For the being blocked though by the law of the inheritance from the possession of the Esau's part, Jacob, in his inordinance longing for the birthright, managed to purchase it at the opportune time. Then, in order for the receiving of his father's blessings, he consented to his mother's conniving for the obtaining of the birthright, or let's do that again. He consented unto his mother's conniving for the obtaining of the coveted birthright through the deceit. For the tragic lesson is painfully conspicuous for the Esau class who attend the duties of their office less than its sanctifies demand, indifferently let it slip from their hands into the eager reaching grasp of the Jacob class, who do veritably appreciate and prize its obligation, but who, not being of the natural born leaders, must acquire the equipment for the holy office by the passing through the disciplinary training of the sum soul trying experience as foreshadowed by the Jacob's training while he was a fugitive from home. Thus, in their providential law, Lot cast out of the house of Israel and out of their homeland that Israel had, the land of Canaan, by their elder brethren, and it was as was the Jacob cast out of the home by his elder brother, because of their zeal in the Yahweh's service, they gained a training for the privileged work that is to be theirs. What an inestimable blessing that the firstborn, their present ministry, are losing theirs is the master's privilege of the standing on the Mount Zion with the Lamb and of the falling forth of the latter-day subjects of the kingdom, ushering in the kingdom itself, bringing in the second advent of the Yeshua, and finally leading the redeemed host into the heavenly Canaan, into the realms of the fadeless glory. But they are about to lose our tragedy of tragedies. For some tempting mess of the potters, they let slip this sovereign privilege. Sadly, they are even now letting it slip away to the Jacob class for the faithful laity, for the 144,000 future servants of the Yahweh, Revelation 7:3, 5:10, and Testimony Volume 5, 4:75 and 6. As the Esau awake to see the folly of his rash of shame, when it was too late for the recovering of his loss, so it will be in the day of the Yahweh with those who have bartered their heirship to heaven for the selfish gratification. Patriarchs and Prophets 182. Read also Testimony Volume 2, page 38 and 39. For the brethren years ago pleaded that the spirit of the truth with the firstborn, and the warning them of the danger of the losing their birthright, if you continue to be as idle, as worldly, as selfish as you have been, for the Yahweh will surely pass you by and take those who are less self-caring, less ambitious for the worldly honor, and who will not hesitate to go, as did their master without the camp bearing the reproach, for the work will be given unto those who will take it, those who prize it, who weave its privileges into their everyday experience. Yahweh will choose the humble man who are by the seeking for the glory of his name and for the advancing of his cause, rather than for the honor and for the advancing of themselves. For he will raise up men who have not so much worldly wisdom, but who are connected with himself, and who will seek strength and counsel from above. Testimony, Volume 5, page 461. For the call for this great and solemn work was presented unto the men of the learning and position. Had these been a little in their own eyes and trusted fully in the Yahweh, he would have honored them with the bearing of the standard and the triumph unto the victory. For the Yahweh will work at work in our day that few anticipate. Let's do that again. For the Yahweh will work a work in our day that the few will anticipate. For he will raise up and exalt among us those who are taught rather by the unction of his spirit than by the outward training of the scientific institutions. Testimony, Volume 5, page 82. Here, Ezekiel 9, 5, and 6, we see that the House of Israel, the Seventh-day Adventist Church, the Yahshua's Son of Yahweh's sanctuary, was the first to feel the stroke of the wrath of the Yahweh the Father. For the ancient men, those unto whom the Yahweh the Father had given great laws, that is, it would be the prophets that he placed over the candlestick of the Seventh Day Adventist Church. That's who he gave great light to. Men with had to have inspiration to teach the true understanding of prophecy as it unfolded, who had stood as the guardian of the spiritual interest of the people, had betrayed their trust, for they had taken the position that we need not look for the miracles and the marked manifestation of the Yahweh's power as in the former days, for the times have changed, for these words strengthen their unbelief. For they say that Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, will not do good, neither will he do evil, for he is too merciful for the visiting of his people and the judgment. Thus peace and the safety is the cry from the man who will never again lift up their voice like a trumpet for the showing of the Yahweh's people their transgression and the house of the Jacob of their sins. For these dumb dogs that would not bark are the ones who feel the just vengeance of an offended Yahweh. Men, maidens, and little children all perish together. And that's page 211 from volume, I guess, 5. Now, as this numerous-based typology turns around unto its next aspect with the Esau and the Jacob, are seen in a further representation of the two sinful classes. For the Esau by the color of his skin, the first one, and by the significance of his name, after it was changed from the Esau unto Edom, for the Jacob, a name, by the meaning of his name, before it was changed, let's read that again, for the Jacob, by the meaning of his name, before it was changed from the Jacob unto Israel, singularly enough, as was the color of Esau's skin red, so was the meaning of his new name, Edom. And as he fell for the appreciating and cherishing of the paternal gift, never fulfilling the meaning of his birth name, he that finishes, it is seen that his new name, unlike the Jacob's new name, signifies not the advancement, but rather failure for the advancing, going on unrestrained in his carnal ways, remaining in his inborn red character. Hence the class of the leaders that he typifies are to lose out, never for the finishing of the Yahweh's appointed work, and never to be transformed from the sinners unto the saints. What a loss. Esau and Jacob, page 31, part 2. We're on the last paragraph, page 31, 27 minutes. Not so, though, that the Jacob class, just as their type, who diligently cared for the sheep, carefully tended to his business, and triumphantly overcame his covetous nature, had his name changed from Jacob, meaning supplanter, unto Israel, meaning an overcomer, and thus a prince. So they also finally triumphant over their own carnal nature. Let's do it again. So they also finally, with the triumphing over their own carnal nature, have their names changed from the Jacobites unto the Israelites, from the supplanters unto the overcomers, from the servants of the self unto the servant of the Yahweh, from the common Christian in the Laodicea unto the exalted princes on the Mount Zion. Thus, in their own right, the antitypical Jacobites become the antitypical Israelites by the acquisition of the priestly birthright. They become the finishers of the gospel work, that is, the teaching of the plan of salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10, 19, and 20, of the new and living way, here in the 12th parabolic hour, in the harvest time, verse history, and also in the judgment of the living time, and in the opening of the seventh seal. All of this would come together here in the 12th parabolic hour, and with Yahshua's presence here sitting upon the throne of David. And as the servants of Yahweh, they stand on the Mount Zion with the Lamb. So it is seen that both the classes, like their types, have their names changed. For the Jacob class, because they cherish as did to Jacob, an imperishable birthright for the Esau class, though, because they despised, for the E class, let's read that a third time, for the Esau class, because they despised, as did the Esau, the imperishable birthright, and cherished the perishable glory of this life, though for the one has a sharp, correct sense of the life's values, for the other a dull, incorrect sense of them. And though Jacob lacked the natural qualification for the performing of the duties of his office, the lack was more than offset by his overwhelming zeal for the birthright, for being responsible as the progenitor of the righteous line to carry on from his father Isaac. Regardless, therefore, how much or how little of the natural talent and acquired training one may have for any position, he will never make a success at it unless he invests in it everything he possesses, throws his whole heart and soul into it. This is one of the life's immutable laws, and it should be remembered by all that it governs prosperity in every field of the endeavor, whether for the believer or the unbeliever. Since one's loss is always another's gain, just as Esau's loss was a Jacob's gain, so the dreadful, imperishable, and priceless loss for the Esau class is to be a glorious eternal gain unto the Jacob class. In the gnawing remorse over the realization of his inestimable loss, Esau found no place of the repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears, Hebrews 12:17. For his fate irrevocably types that which is for the overtaking of all who by their works place themselves in the Esau's class, and the stream of this most instructive typology on the subject we are now carried along for its a climaxing feature of the Jacob stream. On the first night of his flight from the murderous wrath of the Esau, is with the Jacob using a stone for a pillow for the laying down to rest on. And he dreamed, and behold, a ladder set up on the earth, and the top of it reached unto the heaven. And behold, the angels of Yahweh ascending and descending on it, Genesis 28:12. What does the dream mean, being another facet of the same typology? It must necessarily be a prefigurement of a noteworthy event for the overtaking of Yahweh's people, the Jacobites. Since the latter with the one end on the earth and the other in the heaven symbolizes the Yahshua, the son of Yahweh, and since the angels walking up and down on the latter are his messengers, for the whole signal, let's do that again. And since the angels walking up and down on the ladder are his messengers, is the whole signifies that Yahshua shall establish through himself a sure and constant communication between the heaven and earth. And it shall come to pass in that day that I will hear, saith Yahweh, I will hear the heavens, and they shall hear the earth. Hosea 2:21. For the next step in the typology takes into the consideration the mothers of the Jacob's descendants along the chronological path of this numerous phase typology. We now, in the thought, follow the Jacob on unto the palatal ram. There he took unto himself four wives, Leah and Rachel, the daughters of Laban, then Zilpha and Bilhah, their respective maids. For these four were the mothers of the 12 sons of the Jacob, who in the turn were the fathers of the 12 tribes of the Israel. In this type progression of the spiritual Israel, only one of the four, Leah, was Jacob's legal wife. Only she, therefore, can typify the true and legal church, the one which was organized in Jerusalem by the 12 tribes kingdom, and which finally evolved into the antitypical apostolic church at the cross with the Yahshua sitting up of the 12 apostles. For the Rachel must necessarily represent a sister church, the one organized in Samaria by the 10 tribe kingdom and dispersed with it among the Gentiles, Zilpha and Bilhah being strangers and servants unto Leah and Rachel, must necessarily represent the subsequent churches of the Gentile origin. From these four lines descended the anatypical children of the Israel, and what is true in the physical genealogy must be true also in the spiritual genealogy. Hence, while the antitypical, like the typical 12 tribes, come through both Israel, Hence, while the antitypical, like the typical 12 tribes, come through both the Israelite and the Gentile mothers, yet they are begotten by one and the same father, an Israelite, dispersed by the Yahweh throughout the Gentile nation, both the Judah, the two-tribe kingdom, and Israel, the ten-tribe kingdom, were swallowed up by them. Then also the apostolic congregation with Yahshua and the 12 apostles, but an upshoot from the Jewish church, Yahshua's disciples and apostles, as well as the church's early converts, were purely of the tribe of Judah and Benjamin. Remember, dropped her Old Testament title Jewish as she took her New Testament title Christian. Then she gradually lost her Jewish foliage amid the foliage of the engrafted Gentile branches. Now, as we leave this phase of the typology, we enter that of the Jacob's journey homeward. Jacob's journey homeward. 36. after 20 years of the faithful service and patted around and the sharp overreaching employee of the Laban, his uncle Jacob at last turned his face and his steps homeward toward his father's house and the land of the promise. But trouble overtook him while grappling with his fears as to the overcome of his imminent meeting with the Esau. There rested a man with him until the breaking of the day. Genesis 32:24. Here lay down the man Jacob, and rose up the man Israel, exemplifying the agonizing experience through which his posterity must victoriously pass before they also receive a new name, pass from the sons of Jacob unto the sons of the Yahweh, become the Israelites indeed of today, of the Adventist Church, having gained the victory over this test, the time of the Jacob's trouble. They will reach home, the land of the promise, and the happy end of their long and troubled journey. On this trying and testing time, the spirit of the prophecy comments, "For a decree went forth for the slain of the saints, which caused them to cry day and night for the deliverance." Those were the time of the Jacob's trouble. But that's what we're going through right now in the antitype of this writing of Ellen G. White. She wrote this in the early writings, page 86, no, 36 and 37. And then Patriarchs and Prophets 202 and 3. Now, as the Jacob's retirement from his servitude in the Padan ends with his returning home, the typology continues with Israel's going into Egypt. That the Bible reveals its tremendous truth in the diverse ways and the numerous in symbols and figures, in the parables and allegories, in the dreams and the vision, in the types and the providence, is even more fully recognized in the anomalous experience. Let's read that again. In the types and providences is even more fully recognized in the anomalous experience of the ancient Israel going into Egypt. In it, every informed Bible student discerns not mere happenstance, but a purposive design wrought by the omnipotent hand of the providence. Indeed, Joseph himself as the principal character in the great dream, or in the great drama. Let's read that again. Indeed, for the Joseph himself being of the principal character in the great drama, so avouches it, "For Yahweh did send me before you," he declares, "for the preserving life." Genesis 45:5. And the acknowledgement of this, Paul at the instance of the inspiration, forewarns that all these things happen unto them for an example. 1 Corinthians 10:11. How supremely important then that we thoroughly explore, understand, and prize these marvelous examples, or ensamples. Let's do that again. How supremely important then that we thoroughly explore, understand, and prize these marvelous ensamples that the Yahweh wrought for our welfare. With the beginning, with the Jacob's experience, we see the providential characteristics. Or let's read that again. For the beginning with the Jacob's experience, we see the providential circumstances with the shaping of his life all along, even unto the predisposing him and for the love Joseph better for the than his other sons. Let's do that again. Beginning with the Jacob's experience, we see the providential circumstances shaping his life all along, even for the predisposing him to love Jacob or Joseph, to love Joseph more than his other son, Genesis 37:2-11, for the immediate cause of their jealousy and their making away with the lad, thus years before their removing from the Canaan unto Egypt, Yahweh in his providence sent Joseph, as he himself later realized, for the preparing of their way, then by the bringing of the 7 years of the plenty, followed by the 7 years of the famine, and all of the land of Egypt, the Yahweh, the Almighty, further shaped the circumstances so as for the bringing of the entire household of the Israel down into the Egypt, and there were they later reduced unto slavery that cost them untold hardship and the murder of a great number of their male children. From the selling of the Joseph into the slavery unto the slaying of the firstborn in the Egypt, what a sorrowful sequence of the vicissitudes. Why was it necessary that the house of the Jacob pass through such purging experiences? Why? Because all these things, again reminds inspiration, happen unto them for the ensample, and they are written for our admonition upon whom the ends of the world are come, 1 Corinthians 10:11. In his inscrutable wisdom, Yahweh permitted the sons of Jacob to go the hard way so that they might become a type, an ensample, a saving object lesson in the day that he set his hand again the second time for the recovering of the remnant of his people, which shall be left from the Assyria, and from the Egypt, and from the Petros, and from the Cush, and from the Elam, and from the Shinar, and from the Hamath, and from the islands of the sea. Isaiah 11:11, that's taken from. Upon us then devolves the responsibility of this soberly, wisely, and faithfully making their defeats our stepping stones unto victory, for the wonderful indeed to know our path has been charted centuries in the advance. As an integral part of his master and sample, the designer of them promoted Joseph to the throne of Egypt by enabling him to predict the 7 years of the plenty and the 7 years of the famine, whereby Yahweh the Father fed the ancient world with the corn, as he feeds the modern world with the present truth. And it came to pass that the Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river, and behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine and fat flesh, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, 7 other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine up on the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat kine. See Pharaoh. So the Pharaoh awoke, and it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof. And Pharaoh told them his dream, that there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Then the Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. And the Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it, and I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. Then Pharaoh related the dream unto Joseph. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, for the Yahweh has showed the Pharaoh what he is about to do, for the 7 a good kine are 7 years, and the 7 thin and ill-favored kine that came up after them are the 7 years. Behold, there come 7 years of the great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and the plenty shall not be known in the land by the reason of the famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And Pharaoh said, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt, and in the 7 plenteous years the earth brought forth by the handful, and he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the city, the food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up in the sand. And Joseph gathered corn as a seed of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number, Genesis 41:1-49. What is the spiritual significance of this object lesson? Since in the scriptures, the number 7 invariably signifies completeness of the category represented the 7 years of the plenty and the 7 years of the famine necessarily point respectively unto the two successive and complete periods of the time. For the first period of the time is miraculously for the producing in the great abundance, not only for the time then present, but for the time to come. And the second is miraculously to produce very little, if anything. And what else in the field of the symbolism could the stored corn represent? That's the spiritual food, the word of Yahweh stored in the Bible, Psalm 78:24. Accordingly, the end sample shows that the 66 books of the Bible are the Yahweh storehouses of the truth, and that they were filled with the soul and nourishing food during the period of the prophets. In the antecipital period of the plenty, for the sustaining of the spiritual life during that time, as well as during the subsequent period, the period of the gospel in the New Testament, the teaching of the plan of the salvation, the blood of the everlasting covenant of Yahshua, Hebrews 10:19-20, of the new and living way, in the antitypical period of the famine. Hence, the stored truth, which is for the sustaining each generation, both in the Old and the New Testament dispensation, is for the writings of the prophets unfolded, is with the writing of the, let's do it again, is with the writings of the prophets by the unfolding as the timely revelations throughout the New Testament period of the teaching of the plan of salvation of Hebrews 10:19-20, of the new and living ways, that is, through his blood. And such is, as every Bible student knows of the actual fact, clearly the great typological lesson is that in the long reach of the years which have ensued since the Bible was written, and in which there has been no additional spiritual food necessarily, it had to be purchased from the old store, from the Yahweh's great storehouse, the Bible, and is still to be purchased from it, and now as then, only through his appointed distributors, his inspired interpreters, ho everyone that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. Now invites the Spirit, and he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat, yea, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price, Isaiah 55:1. For the type unerringly shows that just as in the Joseph's day, no one could help himself to the corn, but could obtain it only through the Joseph's appointed servant, so even in our day, the only one who provides meat in the due season is the Savior, the Son of Yahweh, through his appointed servant. Only through them he reveals, interprets, and distributes the timely truth. Thus it is that though we are now in the antitypical years of the famine, the period of the indirect revelation from the heaven, there is to be no lack of the food present truth. There is enough stored in the Bible to carry us through the years of the famine if we but make our request to his appointed distributors. This is the most significant, the most urgent, and most needed lesson taught and this providential example for the Yahweh's people, for the fact that the corn is figurative of the Creator's Word, and that the storehouses are figurative of the books of the Bible, automatically make Joseph a type of the Yahshua, the Son of Yahweh, who controls the Scripture and who alone distributes the truth unto those who pay the price, who give up both their inherited and cultivated tendencies to wrongdoing. Christ Object Lessons, page 330, Patriarchs or Prophets and Saints, page 97, by the Ellen G. White. This brings the end of our study. This hour, contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.